It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hello and welcome to the 37th episode of the Pirate Rugby Pod. We've got a jam-packed show coming up today, covering rugby broadcasting, the Women's Six Nations, women's rugby, and of course the URC and the usual roundup from rugby around the world. You know the drill, but if you haven't already, please like, share and subscribe and smash that notification bell.
You can also check us out on TikTok, where we upload short form content all the time, and check out our Substack as well, where you get long read articles once a week in the Sunday Read feature. This week, we argued why a women's Lions team is not 100% Red Roses. So if you want to find that all out, it's in the Linktree link in the description box below. And now to introduce our guest for this week. We're very excited about this one. She's a Cardiff fan, but we'll forgive her. I think we've had two Cardiff fans on now, so that's definitely breached some kind of legal limit. And is double excited as well because she is in the broadcasting game, broadcasting biz. Welcome to the show, Sham.
Hello. It's really nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me on your really good show.
We're absolutely delighted to have you. So we'll crack on with our rugby moments of the week before we chat a bit more about you. So my rugby moment of the week, everyone should have seen it by now, is Warwick Hallant's dummy against Leinster, where he absolutely sent 15 men and half the grandstand to the shops. Every time I watch it, it takes me by surprise. Like, it's Ben Loder's run on the inside that really makes it for me, that he cuts inside, so you really believe it. And fair play to Gallant for backing himself and having the pace to finish in the corner and things. He actually just absolutely does them. So try of the season for me, one of my favourite tries of the season. What about you, mate? What was your moment of the week?
Mine's a bit different, a bit out there. So obviously, and we'll get into it, there have been a couple of issues with Premier Sports since they've taken over from Viaplay. I was getting a lot of feedback online, and I was asking me for that feedback, to be honest, as well, just to try to figure out what exactly is going wrong. And got all that feedback and got in touch with the comms team from the URC, and gave them the feedback, and fair play to them. They took it very seriously. I asked them initially just for a contact within Viaplay who I could share this information with. And they said, no, look, we'll take care of it. And they did that. And then they followed up with me with the statement from Premier Sports, which I think was really, really refreshing and really, really good for them. I think it's really good to see, because obviously they're not happy with it. If fans can't watch content and if people are having content issues. So I think that was really, yeah, just a special shout out to the URC comms team for me. I think it was cool that, yeah, they're very approachable and they're taking this seriously and actually helping people out, because that's what we want to do here. We don't want to come on here and just bash broadcasters. That's the easy thing to do. We want to actually help them out and help the URC out. So that's what we're trying to do. What about yourself, Sian? And I hope I haven't butchered your name already, have I?
No, not at all. My moment is actually from the Wales-Italy game. On Saturday in the Principality Stadium. It was when Alicia Butchers made that break. It felt like she was galloping through open space for about half an hour. Time just stood still. And it was a bit of a great moment, because I think she's had quite a quiet Six Nations for her, for line breaks. And it felt like that was a really nice moment for her. I'm a massive fan of Alicia Butchers. Didn't lead to a try, but I just felt that was a massive turning point. I just felt like, yeah, I felt we were really in this. So yeah, that was my moment, really.
Yeah, fantastic. We're definitely going to talk more about that later on in the show. So I'm going to do some listeners' moments of the week now. There are so many this week, I've had to lay them out in a bullet point table. So Kaylin says, Dana O'Brien kicking Ireland to the 2025 World Cup. More on that to come. Maz, our friend Maz, says Raka scoring a hat-trick after the stick he's been getting off Clermont fans all season. Fantastic for him. Yestin says Rio Dyer leaving Connacht absolutely for dust. He says that's aimed specifically at Ender. He's targeting you there, mate. Leslie says Edinburgh winning at Cardiff. I think Sian's the one being targeted there. I think that's what he's doing. Jade says Junkyard Dog, which I believe is the nickname for the Reds winger, surname is Ryan, I don't know his first name, scoring a hat-trick on his Super Rugby debut. His nickname is Junkyard Dog, and he scored hat-trick on debut, as they say down there. And then one of our South African listeners, who also listens to the Scoop Pod, but he's got a complicated name from my UK dialect, so Umpu Melemo, Melelo. Umpo Melelo, I'm so sorry, mate. That's definitely wrong. Says targets me and says Sharks first try versus the Scarlets. He also listed a load of others, but we've mostly stated them. I think Crusaders getting a win was another one of his. Thank you for listening, mate. Right, let's get into the meat of the show. And before we talk about actual rugby that actually happened, we need to talk about rugby that we wanted to watch but couldn't. So we're big top 14 fans on this podcast, and there was a top 14 match on Sunday night. And Ender, people couldn't watch it.
Yeah, it was a bit of a strange one. So as I kind of mentioned at the beginning, there have been issues with Premier Sports, unfortunately, since they took over from Viaplay the rugby content started about 2 weeks ago. So the first issue really has been URC games, certain games. I think it's been a total of two now, haven't been broadcast online. And then, yeah, unfortunately, this past weekend, the Sunday night game wasn't shown on the app. For quite some time in Ireland, because it was broadcast on their linear channel, it was fine. There were absolutely no issues, but unfortunately, there was just no sign of it for a good chunk of that first half. So I think that was definitely disappointing. But I think we'll probably get into it a little bit. I think, to be fair to Premier Sports, like it's not easy announcing that you're taking over from Viaplay in Q4 of last year and then launching a brand new app. You know, a couple of months later, there were always going to be, I think, teething issues. And I think even from your own experience here, isn't that right? Like things seem to be certainly better than the previous Premier Sports app. But I think it's just important here for people just to have a little bit of patience. And Sian, this is definitely something you can probably talk about. Like if there are issues with apps, it there's a lot of work involved in fixing those. There's a lot of cost involved, and it can be quite complex. But I'm sure they're trying their best. They are, and as I said, they got back to the URC, which I then relayed out on Twitter. So I think that's definitely a positive sign. But again, it kind of goes back to something I mentioned on the Dragons Lair pod last week, was that, you know, it is difficult. Streaming, it's like satellite is still the best form of broadcasting live sport. And again, I think that was another pretty good example this past weekend. So yeah, I think people just hopefully have to just be a bit patient with them, and I'm sure they're taking that feedback on board. It's been a bit of a shaky start, but look, I think it's positive that we have a broadcaster, that somebody came in, took over from Viaplay and has taken over all the rights to the URC. So let's just maybe a bit patient with them. But if you do have any feedback for any of our listeners out there or any viewers, please get in touch, because I am sharing every bit of feedback I get with Premier Sports, in the hope that things will improve. So that's pretty much it for me in terms of that. Jan, from your experience at the BBC, I believe you're an engineer over there. Like, is this something you're not too surprised on in terms of, you know, difficulties with streaming? And do you know, kind of, could you tell us maybe a bit about how difficult it is to get it right and some of the issues that you guys might encounter?
Yeah, I've been a test engineer for like over 10 years, not the BBC, just in software in general. And apps are really hard. Tech is hard. Websites are hard. I don't think people really appreciate how difficult getting apps are, right? Because I think they're quite easy to use often, or they're kind of easy to load. And there's a lot of background that goes into them, and there's a lot that can go wrong. Certainly at the BBC, I was saying earlier, we have quite a high standards of testing, and we have a lot of work. We do a lot of work on accessibility. We're really, really high on accessibility, which you don't often get in sort of like private companies necessarily, which is something I really like at the BBC. Obviously, I'm a bit biased. But yeah, getting tech right is really hard. It is really hard. There's a lot of teams involved. There's a lot of testing involved. There's a lot of development involved. There's just, it's just a lot of coordination, a lot of tech. The architect are often is, particularly I know here at the BBC, we're actually getting off a lot of old tech because we've been around for so long now. We've had to be digital very early. So we've still got some very old architectural systems going on. And it's taking us years and years and years to get off those systems. And it's really long process, really hard. And tech's always changing. It's out of date in, you know, a week. It's last week's news. So there's so many challenges for you know, tech companies. So I sympathize. I do. It is hard to get right.
Yeah. Is teletext
and it's expensive.
Going?
I just
love teletext. I absolutely love teletext. It's not going anymore. No. It's a shame.
It was called Airtel over here. That's a bit.
Before the internet, I used to follow the tennis tour a lot, and I'd be watching in inverted commas, FIFAX, the latest scores, and I'd just be watching a screen tick over like this. Is like, oh yeah, it's before the internet. Bring it back. Yeah.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
So tell us a bit more about working at the BBC then. So you were sharing with us before we started recording a bit about, you know, BBC impartiality. Everyone who lives in the UK knows how much of a debate that is. How yes. seriously do the BBC take impartiality?
So we do take it seriously. And I'm not a content producer. I'm a test engineer. But when I joined the BBC 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I had to do impartiality training. And it felt a bit mad at the time because I was like, well, I'm just, you know, working on the backside, the back end of the stuff. I'm not kind of working on the content producing. But they literally make everybody do it. So you can be David Attenborough and you'd have to do it. You could be, you know, Professor Alice Roberts, you have to do it. You'd be, you know, a journalist, you have to do it. Everyone has to do it. And I think that's so they can literally say that every single person does impartiality training. And yeah, there's a lot of that, and they talk about it in our it's on our core. I think on my pass here, I've got trust, respect, accountability on the little charter. You know, that kind of stuff is really important to the BBC, and we do take it seriously.
Yeah, you were telling us about like the standards that the BBC holds to itself, and you know, so like when it's putting out content, you talked about the accessibility and the content, like it really comes across that the BBC. No, it's obviously being a publicly funded broadcaster, just how holding itself to account it really does.
Yeah, definitely. So when I used to work for a private software agency, we didn't really take accessibility. Well, we didn't even think about accessibility. It was all about how stuff looked. And that was a kind of a bit of a shock to the system when I came here. Cause we actually do take accessibility seriously. But it's in our charter that we have to be able to provide services for everybody. So we can't produce, you know, an app or any content that digitally that someone who uses a screen reader might not be able to access. You know, it's, so we take all of that really seriously. We test a lot for it. We design for it. It's built in for it from the start, which it's one of the things I really liked one of the things I really like about working for the BBC, to be honest.
Mm. And then bringing it back to the rugby coverage then. So BBC has been broadcasting the Women's Six Nations, and it's been a mix between normal on telly broadcasting and iPlayer. So
yes,
some people found that slightly frustrating. So talk us through the challenges of having to, you know, having a responsibility to broadcast so many sports and trying to accommodate women's sports now into the ever-growing picture.
Absolutely. So I think what year would it have been? Not that long after I joined, I did like a little secondment with the BBC sport team, because I'm actually started work with BBC News, and then I did this little comment with BBC Sport, and I was sat in this meeting and they were just saying, yep, this is our charter for the next couple of years, and we have this commitment to broadcasting, and producing content on women's sport. And I felt really proud about that. I was like, I grew up with women's sport not being on TV or anything. So I kind of thought, this is amazing. But then I turned around and was just thinking, the challenges that we've got now is that we haven't had any license fee increases for quite a while, which is technically a decrease in our funding. And we've got to make a lot of difficult choices, basically. So we've got this commitment to increase our coverage in one area, but we don't have the resources to cover everything. So I think it's the challenge of making those choices. What do we cover? And it's really hard. It's really hard to get that right. And, you know, we cannot literally please everybody. It's tough. It's really hard.
Yeah, ITB have had to make a similar, well, I don't think it's official yet, but the FA Cup final is going to clash with the Champions Cup final. ITB have the rights to both. It's expected they're going to bump the rugby to ITV4. But like from my perspective, I completely understand that. Like they're, you know, they got a huge viewership for the, I think it was it the same time between Man United and Coventry, I think. They got record, not record viewers, but like I think it's been one of their highest viewed games so far this year. So like obviously they have to make that decision.
Like
for me, like the main thing is it's still on free to air, but you can see, right? Yes. There's a commercial decision to make there, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's really hard. I think I can't remember what tournament it was. It might have been was it the Olympics, the last Olympics? And there were some complaints that the netball wasn't being shown. But again, it's like you don't have infinite resources. It's really hard, these decisions. I don't know how I wouldn't want to be that person making that decision half the time. I mean, I would just have all Wales matches on BBC One all the time, and then all the England fans would be complaining. But like, you know, I found myself in it myself. I was in Manchester. I was doing the Manchester Marathon on the Sunday, and I wanted to watch the rugby, but my hotel room didn't have iPlayer, and I wanted to watch the Wales game, and I couldn't. I was like, I've watched it on my phone, and I was finding myself getting a little bit frustrated, and yet I know all the challenges that we have, and I know probably they probably thought, well, we'll put England on for the, because it's a bigger audience, and all these kind of decisions to make. I wouldn't like to make it because you're going to annoy some people.
So what's been your thoughts of the BBC's coverage of the Women's Six Nations so far anyway? And just generally, I think everybody in the UK who watches BBC coverage would say that the BBC's coverage of rugby is their favourite over everybody else. What do you think the BBC gets right that some unnamed other channels don't?
It's a very good question. I mean, I am biased because I grew up wanting to be presenting Grandstand. Grandstand was like my favourite TV programme in the world. I just loved it. That and Crash and Sport. And I grew up with that. And it was kind of like the voices on BBC always felt really like comforting. I do think we have good presenters. I think we tend to have really professional presenters that know their stuff really inside out. I do prefer the BBC coverage, obviously. I don't know. I think it's it's kind of just what you kind of expect is that quality, I think, that you possibly don't get for the other channels and the other broadcasters.
I think the BBC, which is impressive given what a historic organisation it is, it keeps itself fresher in terms of the presenters and the pundits, especially. You know, I've ranted on this podcast publicly about ITV in the past. I don't watch TNT that much. And to be honest, with most rugby matches these days, I tune in. If the match is kicking off at 3 o'clock, I tune in at 3 o'clock, and I don't watch much of the pre-match or even the halftime, really. But there's something, I don't know, like I said, comforting about seeing Gabby Logan in her big coat, and you know that you're going to get a quality show.
Yeah, Gabby's really good. She's just a pro. I think it's not just rugby, though. It's like Sue Barker's just one of the best broadcasters, you know. It's people like that, and I don't know. Yeah, it's familiar, familiarity. I can't even speak. I do think like the BBC gets criticised a lot for ticking boxes as well. They've only got so and so on because, you know, they're a woman or whatever. But I think that's a really good thing. I think they're much better now at having a lot more diversity and their presenters, and I don't understand why people complain about checking boxes at all. It's like, well, it's a good thing. you know.
Yeah.
Kids need to see themselves represented. You know, I used to watch TV. Very rarely saw women presenters. You very rarely saw women commentators on the rugby. I would have loved to have been a rugby commentator when I was a kid, but I never even thought I could do it. And whereas now we have it, you know. Yeah. I don't understand why people don't like that. Mm. But I think, you know, people criticize BBC for it, but I think we should be applauding them for it.
I agree. Sometimes I watch other broadcasters again and you're like, God, they've got four of the same man somehow, all stood next to each other. And
yeah.
now I find that jarring rather than like some daft comment about the diversity. Now, when everyone is the same, I'm like, oh, that's a bit weird.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, let's talk about actual rugby that actually happened. And we're going to start off with the women's Six Nations. So England have won the Grand Slam again. This is their third back-to-back Grand Slam. They have something like 29 consecutive wins in the Six Nations. So when we talk about looking back to the 2011 to 2015 All Blacks in the men's game, which we think of being as one of the dominant teams in the rugby union history, they never got to 29 back-to-back wins. Like, I know England obviously lost the World Cup final, which kind of takes the edge of dominance off it. But like, if you take from 2014 to 2024, this was shared by Women's Rugby Data, England have lost in the Six Nations six games, and three of those were in 2015 when they sent all their good players to the Sevens.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah,
like you can say, yeah, they're really good, but it just doesn't it doesn't even seem like it's meaningful anymore because they're just that good, if that makes sense. They are just really good. And I find myself now, I kind of don't really, it sounds a bit cruel, I just assume they're going to win all their games by quite a lot, and I find their games almost like a little bit boring. But I don't like saying it because it's sort of, I don't want to take away from the fact that they are brilliant.
Mm. What do you think makes them so good for you? What's the standout quality?
I mean, they definitely have, and they have had for quite a while, they've had all the resources, you know, and it's going to make a massive difference. I think I saw a tweet by the Rugby Queens, Scrum Queens today, when she was saying that I think they're going to be the first women's team to actually make money. And that kind of made me really sit back and think, look, we can kind of say, yeah, England, you know, they're really good. They've got all the resources and everything. But you actually need a strategy for that. You can't just kind of throw money at the side and then it'll just all happen. So I think I think they've really nailed a strategy. I think they've looked at it like properly. They've really kind of said, right, this is what we need. This is what our strengths are. We'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this. They've got good social media. They've just thought of every kind of aspect.
Yeah.
And I mean, it helps that they've got really good resources. They've got, you know, I mean, they had Brian Ashton going into the other day, didn't they? I thought, oh my God, like, you know, they've got all this kind of wealth of experience coach-wise as well. And they do seem to just have unlimited resources. And I think, you know, they're really nailing it right now.
Yeah, and for me, it's the running of their back line that really sets them apart. If you look at like the line break stats, I think France have got the second most on 30-ish, and England have got over 60. It's such a vast difference. You've got obviously players like Ellie Kildon, Abby Dow, Jess Breach, are all fantastic players, but from an athletic point of view, they just seem to have so much more pace than everybody else.
Yeah, it's funny looking at the line stats, line break stats, because I was looking at that the other day, and it was kind of, I think Wales are on like 14.
Mm.
And they're actually on, I think they're obviously the bottom, but like England are so far ahead. Like it's just kind of, they're real athletes, and they just seem to be faster than everyone and quicker than everyone. They've got props who can, you know, run fast and, you know, I always think of Sarah Byrne. I think she's injured this year, but like last year, like she's always popping up on the wing and like, you know, doing these underpass, like throwing the ball under her arm. She's a fantastic athlete. They've just got, you know, she's out injured and they haven't even missed her. you know, and it kind of blows my mind that they've got that much strength and depth as well. But I think this year, I don't know, I think they do seem to be playing better again this year. I think, like, they are scoring. They seem to be playing a slightly different style of game, I think. And you've got someone like Meg Jones, who's just, like, they haven't, I mean, she's kind of not been mentioned quite so much, I don't think. But I think she's had an amazing tournament. Like, she's just incredible. Like, big shout out for her as well. She Cardiff Quinns player, obviously, but when she was a junior. But, you know, I think, yeah, England are really, really good. And it's not to take anything away from, I'm kind of like a bit bored of them being really, really good. I want teams to start kind of, you know, challenging them, because I do worry that the game, we've got all this momentum and the game is building and everyone's really excited about the game, right, you know, in a right way, and it's all really positive at the moment. But how long can that last when there's only one team winning? You know, are you gonna fill stadiums when they're just gonna win 50-0 all the time, 60-0?
Yeah, definitely.
Men's game, even the men's Six Nations, like, yeah, they are always improving, but so too are the other teams. But that's such a good point as well on the, like, if they, whether or not they can keep that interest. But a really interesting piece by Fiona Thomas from the I think it was the Telegraph this weekend, or today actually, sorry, yeah. And yeah, they got huge viewing figures for this game. So that Grand Slam win versus France was the most watched sporting event in the UK last weekend. And it was a peak audience of, what, 1.9 million? So I think that's really, really positive. So obviously people are tuning in as well. So I think that's really good to see. So it's not just, and again, shows you how the importance of getting these games out on prime time, free to air television, not just, yeah. I think that was a really good positive from the weekend. But from an Irish perspective, that's definitely one thing I worry about, is just the gulf in class between Ireland and England. And English obviously is going to keep getting better. And then just touching on that to hear that there are, you know, getting some of that money back, like, I think that's a good thing as well, because it's not just a case of throwing money at it, because, like, that's unsustainable. And we've seen this in the Prem last season. Look at all those teams. Like, you can't just, it has to be the revenue generated there. I think so. Again, like, it all seems very positive to me, from an English rugby perspective. From an Irish rugby perspective, maybe not so much, but it seems that things are improving. But yeah, I was really kind of blown away by those viewing figures, and yeah, brilliant to see.
Yeah.
Shall we just talk about Ireland's there then? So finished a historic, well, not historic, because they've won the Six Nations in the past, but a massive turnaround from last year. Rock bottom of the pile last year to, as we said before, Dana O'Brien kicking them to the World Cup, qualified on for the World Cup outright, WXV3 to WXV1. End of, I mean, no one saw this coming, did they?
I don't think so, no. And again, I've touched on this probably in the last pod as well. When you consider where, you know, there's been a lot of praise for David Nusifora, well, from certain quarters of Ireland, maybe not from Munster, but in terms of Ireland's success,
Munster
from a men's
complain
perspective. you know, like, Irish rugby has gone through a very, you know, good couple of, I'd say, two decades now of a lot of success and consistent form and great provinces. But obviously the massive caveat there has been, especially in recent years, because I know you said they did have success previously, but women's rugby seems to have, you know, seemed to have fallen off a cliff. And to see a result like this and getting third, I think it is massive from that perspective. And it's getting this interest in the sport as well. Like, it was a great out in Musgrave Park a couple of weekends ago. Like, so there's definitely that interest there as well. And I think people want to get behind the Irish women's team as well. And they do have some genuine superstars, which I know you
absolutely
often touch on. Yeah. So I think it all seems positive. It's certainly not where it should be, but thankfully it's going in the right direction, and it hasn't been at the cost of the men's team or anything. It just shows you can, if you put the funding and the resources in there, results will come on the pitch. And that's certainly the case for the English women's team anyway, as we've touched on. But yeah, definitely a positive from an Irish rugby perspective.
Yeah, the fastest ruck speed in the tournament, Ireland. And also Dana O'Brien, again, she's getting a lot of mentions. very good goal kicking, which is still like a slight weakness in the women's game, is the goal
it
kicking
is
brilliant.
It is getting better. I think the standard's getting much better though. And I think each year it just seems to be getting that much better. So I think that's one area that's really the speed of the improvements made is huge, really. And I think that's professionalism, definitely. I've really enjoyed Ireland's tournament, actually. It was hard. I mean, don't get me wrong, the Wales game was hard. I had a nervous breakdown during that game. Yes. it was not fun for a Welsh fan perspective, but I really enjoyed seeing them. I think, you know, obviously we know they've had a really tough time of it, you know, and they had a bad year last year, particularly. And I love an underdog story as well. And it was really, I really enjoyed watching Ireland play this year. They've been great. Really, really good. Some fantastic performers.
Yes. Sam Monaghan, absolutely fantastic.
Oh, I love Sam Monaghan. Not to talk about Wales, but I think sometimes Wales have really lacked like a leadership. And I've watched Ireland and I was thinking, oh God, I was kind of like thinking we kind of need a Sam in our team right now.
Yeah. And then you got Aoife Wafer as well, absolutely fantastic. And the halfbacks like that I've spoken about, just really exciting. And I think they've really managed to use that sevens program to themselves. I think they got the most out of the Celtic Challenge than any of the other nations. So let's switch to Wales now. Before the tournament, the talk was, can we challenge France? And by the end of the tournament, it was, can we sneak a win at home to Italy, which we managed to do in the end. You were there. So talk us through your experience going to the match. It was about 10 or so thousand at the Principality. So obviously 10,000 as a crowd, but it was a record crowd for a standalone women's game in Wales, although it's played in a 70,000 seater stadium. So Harley was there and he said it felt a bit odd. What was your kind of experience?
That's interesting you say that, because I felt a little bit odd. It's a fantastic stadium, but when you have 10,000 people in a stadium that holds, 74,000, whatever it is, it felt a little bit strange. It did feel a little bit strange, I got to say. Like, the atmosphere, I felt a little... You couldn't really sense the same atmosphere as if we'd had 10,000 people in Cardiff Farmers Park, which, you know, would have made them, you know, the atmosphere would have just blown off the roof. So, yeah, it did feel a little bit odd. It did feel a little bit odd. But I would say that, because I went to the Scotland game as well, and it was interesting because we had a decent crowd at Cardiff Farmers Park for that, but Wales walked out. And I remember saying to my sister, who I went to the game with, it's like, where's the energy here? It just felt a little bit flat. And that kind of summed up Wales for most of the tournament. They just seemed a little bit low energy. They definitely, you could sense they had a little bit more energy about them on Saturday. But I actually do think if the game had been played at Cardiff Arms Park, I think the home advantage would have, I think they would have made a little bit more of the home advantage. Because it kind of, for me anyway, it sort of neutralised the home advantage. They could have been anywhere, really.
Yeah, I think Parc des Scarlets would be a cool venue. It's only just popped into my head for Wales women, because that's a 15,000
it would
capacity.
Be.
Yeah. And it's a very modern facility. It's more modern than Arms Park, obviously. But speaking of the actual performance on the pitch, you know, we sort of scenes of Johan Cunningham, who was obviously under a lot of pressure after the game, the players celebrating him, but not just focusing on the Italy game, but generally across the board for this Six Nations. Yeah, I think we have to talk about it in terms of what's gone wrong. So what kind of, in your opinion, are Wales missing?
Yeah, I feel like it's not one thing. I think there's several things that's kind of, I don't know if say going wrong or it's just not hitting the mark. I got to say, I did feel, so we had a bit like Ireland this year in a sense. We had a really good year last year after, you know, some difficult times. But I always felt it was kind of a little bit built on sand. I knew that this year was going to be really hard because expectations were going to be so much greater. They'd been longer under contract and being professional. So I always thought that this year was going to be hard. They came out, like I said, at the Scotland game, sort of with no energy. And Scotland wanted it more. We could have won that game. It was a pretty close game in the end. Scotland definitely wanted it more. Definitely. Our attack looked really flat. It just had no kind of energy or no, you know, there was just nothing to it. And we've had, you know, we've had this before. We had it last year. Our backline aren't exactly cutting edge.
one try by a winger in the last 12 months.
Yeah, and that's a concern. That is a concern. But for some, you know, this year it felt even worse again. We felt, I think we're probably quite an easy team to play against because they just knew that we were going to give the ball to Celia.
The three try scorers is the starting front row. And when I saw that, I wasn't able to watch the game, but when I saw the try scorers, I was like, that's predictable.
Yeah.
If I had to say who's going to score tries for Wales.
Exactly. But, you know, we are predictable. So I think Scotland really did their homework. And I think Ireland really did their homework. And obviously England did. You know, so I think, and France, obviously. So I think Italy are probably not, have kind of gone a little bit backwards as well. I don't think Italy are as good as they probably were in previous years. But yeah, there was a lack of idea. It felt like we had plan A and we didn't have plan B. Not that dissimilar to the men in a sense. I often feel we kind of don't have that second gear that we can go into. So I think there was that. I think there's a lot of that sort of like, you know, it looked at times like we hadn't played with each other or we hadn't been training for very long. It looked like they were rusty, looked like they, you know, there was something they're missing. And I do think that there were many times when you just felt, where's the leadership? There's no one kind of, you know, talking to players. There was very, you know, when you were there on the pitch, like the end of the Scotland game, you know, Sian Jones got criticised for kicking the ball out and everything. But it's like, okay, it's the first cap and she's inexperienced. You know, her teammates, she took the ball back and she was obviously going to kick. There was time, you know, for a player, one of the players, to be like, don't kick it, don't kick. You know, there was just,
exactly.
There was just a lack of communication. There was just none. There was like, yeah, it felt weird. It felt a bit odd. So there's like a weird atmosphere going on. And the Ireland game, they looked like they'd never met each other. I mean, it was just bizarre, really strange. It was as if they just hadn't, you know, hadn't been training. And I don't, I don't know whether it was complacency. You know, they were talking before the Ireland game about, oh, we just need a bonus point. We're up to third and all this kind of stuff. It's like, hang on, you know. You know, it was kind of...
I think there's a big complacency factor to it.
I think possibly there is. And, you know, you've got to say that that's a lack of management. You know, you need... And leadership, you know, you can't... You know, they are professionals now. We can't... you know, you can't just go into a game... Without doing your homework, you've got to have your plan A, you've got to have your plan B. And I think that they obviously thought that they were going to do better than they have done. And that's a bit disappointing, I think.
Yeah, there's a bit of a... I'm going to contradict myself a bit here because I said it complacent a second ago, but there's a bit of a culture across Welsh rugby, whether it's Pathways, whether it's the men's regions, whether it's the men's national team, of excuses. And when they're coming out and talking about, oh, we haven't been professional that long and, you know, we haven't got the pathways, blah blah blah, I'm like, well, that's the truth for four out of the six nation teams. Like Scotland have been professional for less time than us. Ireland, we know about their issues. Italy, you know, they've got challenges when it comes to where their player pool comes from.
Yeah,
so why are we going backwards compared to these? We should be comfortably ahead of these. So it's frustrating.
Yeah, it is frustrating. And sometimes you kind of like, I can't quite work it out. And I changed my mind. And I was a little bit where like, it kind of annoyed me a little bit that they were coming out and apologising. Not, I know that they don't want to, they're not going to want to lose a game. They're not going out there to lose. They want to win, you know, and they were, I think Georgia Evans came out and was apologising. And I felt like we don't really want an apology. We kind of, you just got to come out and kind of take a bit of ownership and just be like, yeah, we need to do this.
Yeah.
You know, it just felt a bit strange to come out and apologise. It felt a bit like something that they would have done like a few years ago at the men's game, sort of like early 2000s, you know, it kind of just felt a little bit amateur-y.
It's never good when the open letters start coming out. That's always a bad thing.
No.
I want to end on a high with Wales, though. One player that I want to single out who has been absolutely phenomenal all tournament is Alex Callender.
He's the best. Al Cal.
Look at me, I am the captain now. Vibes.
Definitely. I'm definitely a member of the Al Cal is awesome bandwagon. Yeah. She is just an incredible player. She has the heart of a lion. She has the roar of a lion. You know, I think she should definitely be captain. I would make a captain instantly. I think she can inspire a team, I think.
We do our Substack, and we got a new subscriber, and I won't read out the full email address because then everyone will have their email address, but their email address began with a calendar. So Alex, not a calendar. No. Spelled as in, because it happened after we put out the content about Women's Lions, and Alex Calendar is named in that. So if Alex Calendar, if you are listening, we think you're great.
Yes, we do. I think, you know, just to say about like Wales is a bit doom and gloom, I actually think like Saturday there were a lot of positives to take from the game. Like, I think they looked a lot more energetic. They just looked really up for it. You know, there's been like players like Georgia Evans, I think, has played really well in this tournament. I think, you know, Cecilia is just an incredible player. Shaky George, I thought, like, she stepped up and took that kick at the end. And I know it was like an easy kick, blah, blah, blah. But like, you still got, it takes a lot of balls to do that after stuff that's happened. So I think there's a lot of positives to take, I think, from that game. You know, Wales have underperformed. We're a better side than last, I think.
That's the thing. I just hope that people don't go, oh, phew, we won a game anyway, so everything's fine, and kind of move on. Anyway, so just to wrap up the women's rugby chat then. So there was another women's rugby match that happened down south, a big match. It was the Super W final. And the Waratahs beat the Drua. Drua, I think, were two times champions going into this. 50 points to 14. Big old win for the Tars. But I've seen a little bit of them, not tons, a little bit of this season, and they looked pretty sensational, to be honest. So it's very exciting for Australian rugby.
Nice.
Anyway, let's move on now to the URC. So, Ender, Munster, 2 from 2 in South Africa. Not many people do that.
Yeah, this was not a good weekend for my Super Brew predictions, let me tell you. I was just really impressed by Munster. It just shows you like what teams can achieve when they've got their full squad. And that's the reality of it for me. Like, Munster have a really good core of players, and a lot of them are bloody well fit at the moment. And I think that's been reflective in those two massive wins. I don't think it's as obviously, it's not as impressive as the win against the Bulls. You know, the Bulls' first loss against European opposition in Pretoria, which is just like, it's mad that they've managed to do it. But now that they've backed this up and gone to the Lions, who were just after beating, you know, a depleted Leinster side, but it was still a win, I think was highly impressive. Nobody saw this coming. And it really does bring up this conversation that, you know, well, it's also a reminder to people that they are the reigning champions. I don't know how the format is, or like if Leinster, I think, you know, if Leinster say go all the way in the Champions Cup this year, there could be a repeat of that semi-final. We can probably get into that when we discuss Leinster next. But for me, this is a reminder that, yeah, Munster will be there or thereabouts towards the end of the season. And they absolutely totally deserved it. Like that Lions team again, like as AP or one of our previous guests, said, you know, like this has been a squad that's been together, like they're a very consistent team, especially in terms of selection, and that's probably why they are where they are, and they've been playing pretty well. So I think again that just shows how much of a good win this was for Munster. And again, yeah, just pretty surprising, like not many teams do that. But I think it shows that Munster are going to be there, and for me, they like, they're one of the favorites, if not the favorite, I think, for the title after those two wins, because that's something else for me. And unfortunately, I'll be going to it, but Connacht are thereabouts in terms of that top eight. But if you look at Connacht's last three games, one away to Leinster and then two also away to Munster, a game which I'm going to went to last year, wasn't so good, and also the last home game at the sports ground as we know it, or the Dexcom Stadium, we used to call it, and that game is against the Stormers. But yeah, I really think, yeah, this Stormers season, like, it's very disappointing. Well. Yeah, they are. They've opened. I love that from John Dobson as well. He said it. And he's always he's so refreshing when he talks about, like, whenever you hear about the South African teams, whether it be in the Challenge Cup, the Champions Cup, or the URC, the negative thing that people always talk about is the travel and how it takes its toll, blah, blah, blah. And Dobson always just comes out and says, look, we just embrace it. We love traveling. It's a great way to bond. And I love that just positive approach from, like, it is, it's an issue, obviously, but he just embraces it. And I'm sure, like, a lot of those teams, like, if there is that right mindset, like, it's probably a great thing. Traveling down and like a massive, yeah, squad building exercise, just like Munster. I'm sure those two wins now are going to stand to them towards the end of the season, which we're pretty much at now, right? Like, what, three rounds left, regular season rounds?
Mm-hmm.
Which are really impressed. What did you guys think? Did you see it? Did anybody, either of you, admit that you saw this coming, or like two wins?
Not really.
I'm a bit in, to be honest, lately, I'm just a bit in awe of Irish rugby, particularly the, you know, from a Welsh point of view. When the Celtic League first started, way, way back, the Irish teams didn't do very well. I remember Cardiff thrashing them a lot of the time. And I think that was quite a long time ago now, but the turnaround now is amazing, pretty much. Irish rugby is nailing it, a bit like the Red Roses. Really, just, yeah, I would be so happy if Cardiff were anywhere near as good as like of Munster. You know, it's kind
you
of
beat the Sharks 35-0 that one time. You can catch you guys to say that on a podcast when talking about Cardiff and South African rugby.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh,
yeah. But for me, the Munster absolutely nailed the game plan. With the Sharks, they love to score on the counter-attack. So how do you stop from counter-attacking? Let them have the ball. You can't counter-attack if you're just attacking. And yeah. Munster, I think, however many tries off, hardly any carries, 80-something carries. Zeebo out here moving like Zidane. Like, it just, I think they it just shows what taking it seriously can do for you.
Yeah.
Speaking of, someone who's being accused of not taking it seriously at the moment, Ender, is Leinster. Sending people were Googling their team that they put out against the Stormers. I've never heard of these people. What do you make of it? Are Leinster disrespectful to the URC, or are they just arrogant?
Nope. They're neither for me. Like, you earn, I think, that decision that they were able to make by bringing in not necessarily an experienced squad. Like, if they put in other players on that team, like a player like Reece Rugg, he's got a hell of a lot of Leinster caps and a good few Irish caps, to be honest. But I think, like, look, yeah, we all love the URC, especially on this pod. We're all advocates of it, and it isn't a good look necessarily when you see a depleted Leinster team put out like that and lose two games pretty heavily. But I think they've earned that decision, or that, you know, that decision to make, to take that gamble or whatever. I think because of where they are, and they were, like, I know now Glasgow, I think, are 4 points clear at the top of the log, as everybody likes to call it now, the table, I should say, in my traditional sense. But yeah, just, it's I think they've earned that right to do that. And whether or not it's the right decision, it wasn't the right decision last season when they lost semi-finals to Munster. Mm-hmm. It backfired hugely, and that's why, you know, especially after that first loss as well, in South Africa, people were thinking that maybe that, you know, they would put out back it's just, I think they, like, it's not a good look, but I admire them backing their youngsters and giving them that time. What I just hope, like, I think, like, let's just, yeah, again, take a step back and look, like, what we also want to see, I think, from a tournament is young players get exposure. Yes, we want to see the best players play week in, week out, but I think what makes URC a bit different to other tournaments is that we do get to see squads play when the internationals are away. And I think that's exciting, and it gives players an opportunity to impress. And I think that adds a bit of interest to it. And let's maybe embrace it. But the one caveat that is, I hope it's not, I think when it gets to knockout stages like last year, I hope we don't see a repeat of that. Like, I think that was really disappointing, especially from your seed perspective, not seeing Leinster put out their first squad. But look, it's the reality of the way the structure is, and Champions Cup in Ireland is the pinnacle. We need to give players rest and player welfare and all that. So there's so many different factors. But for me, they're not disrespecting tournament. They entered this weekend's top of the log, and I think they deserve to take that risk. And
no, I agree. I was being a bit spicy with my question. I agree. They've earned it. When you're the top dog, you get to do what you want, and I think that's fair. Someone who wasn't the top dog this weekend was the Ospreys. They got absolutely destroyed by the Bulls. The back three of Willie LaRue, Curtly Aronson, and Kalen Moody absolutely destroyed. Like, Ospreys' top tackler was Keelan Giles. So that tells you where the Bulls were attacking. Sean, are you one of the Welsh fans who supports all the regions, or are you Cardiff or Dye?
A good question, right? Now, I like to see all the Welsh regions do well. But if you'd asked me this, like, you know, 20 years ago, when the regions were starting and all that kind of stuff, no. But now I don't like to see any of the Welsh regions lose. Obviously, when it's a, you know, Cardiff are playing Dragons, it's war, and Scarlets as well. That's different.
Nah, you're a nice person. I like to see the discussion. but we're going to talk about what happens to the Scarlets most weeks. I mean, I'm very much punching
Cardiff,
up, guys.
Really.
Let's talk about
Cardiff.
Anyway, and let's get into rugby around the world then.
Yep. Okay. Let's start off in the Southern Hemisphere with Super Rugby Pacific. The Hurricanes lost, which is a big surprise. Their first loss of the season, lost away to the Brumbies. Their lead over the Blues is now cut to 1. And in other news, the Fijian Drua won the Clash of the Pacific against Moana. Then moving to Japan Rugby League 1, another 60-point loss for Honda Heat from Kubota, I should say. Wales fullback Liam Williams scored a try. Shout out Liam Williams and Scarlets. The big game of the weekend saw Lupus beat Sun Goliath to strengthen their grip on second place. Bottom side Liners picked up a rare win over the Black Rams. What's going on in the wonderful world of Super Rugby Americas, Hugh?
So Yacare, who are from Paraguay, beat Dogos from Argentina in the big shock of the weekend. So the two Argentinian teams looked like it was a dogfight. How do you get it, Dogos? Between themselves for the title. But no, Yacare did a job on them, and champions Peñarol beat American Raptors. Then we move into the top 14. Biggest result of the weekend probably was Perpignan beating Montpellier in a big, as it were, six-pointer relegation battle. Montpellier now still in the access game playoff. And if I can finally get my act together, we might actually see on the Pirate Rugby YouTube a video about Montpellier this weekend, as long as I actually write the script. Also, we've had a message from our friend Maz to point out that Racing 92 are shit. And she asked me specifically to say that on the phone. Also, Stade Francais got battered by Clermont, which doesn't happen very often. Clermont down the table, Stade Francais were at the top. So that's a big surprising result. It's all happening in the AIL at the moment, mate.
Yeah, historic day on Sunday where both the men's and the women's finals were held. At the Aviva Stadium, and there was free-to-air coverage on TG Car, and it was also shown worldwide on their player. Great day, great occasion. I think it was over 7,000 in for the men's game. Not sure the figures for the women's game, but if I don't know if anybody caught the women's game, it was an absolutely cracking game. UL Bows were victorious over Railway Union, and then in the men's, Cork Con won in the Division 1A. They beat last year's champions, Terranure, in another cracking game. Brilliant occasion. The AIL there seems to be a lot of focus on it at the moment, and a lot of positive news stories coming out about it. A good day all around for the AIL. Moving then to the English Premiership, Bristol won away against Leicester in probably the biggest upset of the weekend. And the now the Tigers are down in eighth. Saints are still top despite their loss against Quins. We had no English Championship games, but there was plenty of MLR action. So the goddamn Sabercats beat San Diego 33-0. And Free Jacks beat LA to stay top of the Eastern Conference. And Seawolves kept the pressure on. Hugh, what's going on in the Welsh Prem?
So we're into dead rubber time of the season. The playoff spots are completely wrapped up. But Carmarthen Quins absolutely battered Neath 52-7. Scarlets and Wales under-20s scrum half Archie Hughes with the first half hat trick, and his Scarlets teammate Charlie Titcombe kicking the goals as well. Sean, you were telling me that you do occasionally follow the Rags. It feels like that the Cardiff RFC in the Premiership is the most followed team by the regional crowd. What's special about the Rags?
It's a really good question. I think it's because it's the traditional blue and blacks. I think I really don't know. I think it's that classic kind of. I think there's a lot of diehard Cardiff fans like me who remember going to see the blue and blacks, and we still have that. That to us is almost like the old Cardiff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's a bit of romance, kind of the old kind of blue and blacks. Beautiful.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so we'll go into and finish up with the rugby TV guide. So, Ender, you were tweeting there's some exciting news for people who don't have a TNT sports subscription this weekend.
Yeah, some great news. And this is on the back of some other great news from a, we'll call it free to air. I know it's not exactly on a linear channel, but TV5 Monde, who are a French broadcaster, and they do it most seasons. But last week, as I mentioned on the Friday Breakfast Pod, they announced that they're showing 10 top 14 games for free. So basically a game from this past weekend right up until the end. They're also showing all the playoff games, semi-final games, and the final, all available on their app. So I think that's really cool. But also, we were able to confirm yesterday that they're also showing this weekend's Challenge Cup semi-final between the Sharks and Clermont, and also the Toulouse the Harlequins game in the Champions Cup. Nice. And I also believe that they're going to be showing the final. Now, it's in French commentary, but I think a lot of our listeners and viewers actually might prefer that to certain.
It makes you feel really sophisticated. It makes me feel clever,
yes.
If you sat there with a glass of red or something and you're watching
glass of wine,
French belly. And those amazing like French camera angles as well are going to be mad.
Yeah.
They love a classy angle, don't they? The French TV. The directors just go to town. I love
it. Is that ever an issue? I don't know if you know, but like when the BBC has to use the French feed, is there ever a kind of like a communication breakdown?
I have no idea.
Well, just you can, if it doesn't just show rugby, it's not just a rugby app, it's just like watch French telly on TV5 Monde. I've got it on now.
Yeah, it's really good news as well.
That's really good.
Like, I couldn't get over the traction, but I couldn't get over the traction as well that I got. Like, people were absolutely delighted with this news, and I didn't think it would. Like, I think the one about the top 14 got like some like 82,000 views on Twitter, which is just, yeah, it's good to see.
Oh, wow.
So obviously there's a lot of interest there, because I think like a lot of people love the top 14, but you know, they might not have a Premier Sports subscription. So I think again, it's good for the top 14. It's good for us over here on this side of the world. Also, I was listening to the Rugby Pod again this morning. It seems like Chasing the Sun is very, very close to getting a broadcaster. Apparently they're getting the licensing deal done again. No rumors yet. My prediction is Sky, but we'll see what materializes. And then if you want to hear the full TV guide, please tune in to our Friday morning breakfast pod. But just to give you a flavor, we got Champions Cup, Challenge Cup, Super Rugby, Super Series Sprint, MLR, Japan Rugby League One, loads coming up this weekend, and we'll have the full guide out for you guys on Friday. That's it from me from a rugby broadcast and TV guide perspective. Over to you, Hugh. Any final words?
No, just keep your eyes peeled for all the latest. So if anybody is an audio only listener and doesn't go on the YouTube, just to let you know that we do videos every Saturday, which is a shorter video, like a 3-minute video on any given topic of the week. We did one on the Crusaders falling apart this season, although they now sadly look like they're putting themselves back together again. And there'll be more coming up. So if anyone's not aware of that series, keep an eye out. And remember to just follow all of the links in the link tree down below. Sean, thank you so much for coming on. It's been absolutely class. I'm sure that you're going to get booked for more podcasts off the back of this.
Oh, I hope so. I've really enjoyed it. It's been awesome.
Fantastic.
Well, thanks very much. We really do hope you come back on as well. We say this to all our guests, but like Jenny, we really, really hope you come back on.
You actually really mean it that. For me, basically. Is that what you're saying? No, I really
Well, just
it.
From the rugby broadcasting perspective.
Yeah. Rugby, honestly, I've been into rugby. I think my earliest memory was Wales coming third in the 1987 Rugby World Cup. Rugby is literally in my DNA. So it's just basically talking about my favourite thing.
Mm. That's what we say to all our guests when they come on. They're like, I don't know if I can talk about it. And like, trust us.
Which is exactly what I said.
What do you do all weekend?
Yeah. Anyway, I think we should end it there then, everybody. So cheers for listening. And we'll see you again soon.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Sports Social Podcast Network.